Welcome to the Thriveology Lab podcast, where we explore the science, philosophy, and practice of thriving. Our goal is to help you create a happier and healthier life through education, application, and transformation. Your co-hosts on this journey are Neil Utterback, that's me.
And Phil Dunwoody, that's me. Neil and I are both on the faculty at Juniata College, where we teach courses to promote human thriving and well-being. Today's topic is about living purposefully in alignment with your values. Before we begin this episode, I do want to mention that our last episode, episode 9, was also about meaning and purpose. We talked in that episode about Viktor Frankl's classic work, Man's Search for Meaning, as well as Martha Beck's book on integrity, and really kind of explored what is meaning and purpose, how does it help us survive adversity. So you should listen to that podcast episode as well. It is definitely deeply connected to this one. You can listen to them independently, but you'll want to check that out. In this one, we're going to go into a bit more of the research and then discuss more explicitly how values are different from purpose and meaning and behaviors and how these things all connect together. So Neil and I spent a good bit of time discussing this ourselves, you know, reading the literature and trying to figure out, because there are different models in the literature for how these things connect. So kind of reading over all of them, what do we come away with in terms of this relationship between values, purpose, behavior, and meaning, and then how does reflection kind of tie all of this together? So, Neil, do you want to walk us through or at least start some of the basics of this model?
Right. So, and we're going to talk about some other models too, but the model we're using, we can think of it sort of like I'll make a little triangle shape here for those who can't see, a little triangle shape, and it's circular because there's a lot of feedback here, but values are essentially those things that are deeply important to you at your core. They're the things that if they weren't part of your life, you wouldn't feel like you. You might value time with friends and family. You might value fairness, fitness. There's a whole list of values. And then we can think of ourselves prospectively, sort of in the future. If I lived in alignment with those values for decades, what kind of person would I be? What is the direction at which I'm going? And to get there are our behaviors. And we all have some behaviors that are in alignment with our values, some that aren't. And what we're trying to do in that iterative reflective process is bring those more in alignment so that we're really focused toward that becoming purposeful goal. And if we can do that, we start to develop a sense of meaning. And that meaning is retrospective. So we can think of it sort of like that future-looking purpose and then reflecting back along the way, how am I doing this the way I want to do that? That takes a great deal of reflection. Martha Beck would call that living with integrity, wholeness. And we're going to talk about sort of the idea of how these things give us a sense of coherence, that it makes sense. Meaning is about sort of, does my life make sense? And all of that is iterative and six. So that triangle, you can think of it as a circle or like, but they all continuously feed back. It's constantly iterative. And this is where, again, going back to that mindfulness, mindfulness just keeps coming back as a foundational practice to reflect on all of those things continuously.
Yeah, so to unpack that a little bit, right? So values, we discussed this a little bit last episode in that, you know, often when it's sometimes in crisis, someone close to us dies or we get sick or COVID-19 caused a lot of people to kind of question what they were doing in life. It's often in these moments where we become more kind of reflective on, geez, is my life really in alignment with what I believe? Martha Beck talks about finding yourself lost in the dark wood of error from this Dante's Inferno analogy, which I just love. And it really has the sense of, you know, gosh, I'm doing all these things, I'm busy, but I don't feel fulfilled. I don't have this sense of purpose. I don't have a clear sense of meaning. What am I doing? How did I get here? Mm-hmm. And so that often people will feel anxious, they'll feel depressed. And so what we asked people to do, our listeners at the end of the last episode, was reflect on what are some of your core values. And if you think about the things that you do on a regular basis or the things that are important to you, these are indicators of what your values are. And that what you want is for values to then feed into some clear sense of purpose. And there might be more than one, right? There, you may have a sense of purpose in your job. You may have a sense of purpose in your relationships. But it is, to reiterate what you said, Neil, this kind of future-oriented look. And then the third leg of that triangle is behaviors, right? Because, and I know I'm reiterating some of this, but we all have behaviors that we think like, yeah, okay, well, I value being fit and healthy, but yet I'm doing these things that, like, I value being well rested. I was reading a good book last night, and I'll admit I stayed up too late, and I don't feel as well rested as I should today, right? So, the behaviors that we do that sometimes are inconsistent with at least some of our values.
And we could tease some of those behaviors out as like the intentional ones where like I'm making, and then the habitual ones where some of the intentional stuff has become repeated so much that they are almost unconscious or we just start doing them habitually. But we'll talk about that in more detail as well.
Yeah, and that's largely what habits are, right? They're well-learned routines that run relatively automatically without effort on our part. And this is why it's hard to actually change habits that we have, because it requires effort, because our brains are designed to kind of run on autopilot a lot of the time. So our next episode, just to tease that briefly, is really going to be about how to kind of bring your behaviors more in alignment with your values. And a lot of us do this. Like a New Year's resolution is just that, right? Is to say, I want to be this better person in some way, so I'm going to do something different. And we all know from doing that how hard it is to actually live up to that. In I don't know what percent of New Year's resolutions, fail, but it's probably the vast majority of them. So how do the next episode will be, how do you make changes in your life to kind of slowly move yourself more into alignment, bring your behaviors more into alignment with your values, which should help clarify your sense of purpose and then result in more meaning. And reflection, as you indicate, is a big part of this. We did 2 standalone episodes on mindfulness, and it's come up in every episode I think we have done. And I think this in particular, when you're talking about purpose, you're talking about values, some of the mindfulness prompts that I've been doing using the Healthy Minds Innovations apps have been very explicit about that, and that they often ask you when you sit down to practice to set an intention. Why are you practicing? To just reflect on that. One of the exercises was to imagine your 100th birthday party and kind of people talking about your life in its most ideal sense and how that would speak to your values and what it would mean to live more in alignment with that now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that intent is I think directly linked to the idea of purpose. Like why purpose is about your why. Why am I doing these things? And as Friedrich Nietzsche said, like, and I'm paraphrasing here, the man who knows, if you know your why, you can endure any how. And so often that dark wood is because we had a bunch of hows and whats, and we didn't know why, and suddenly we woke up and we're lost in the wood, and how did I get here?
Exactly. Again, going back to Martha Beck, she talks a lot about, well, Viktor Frankl as well, you know, society inculcates us into believing we should be doing certain things. And we go through so much of our lives pleasing our teachers, pleasing others. And not that that's all bad, I'm not saying it is, but at some point we might start to forget what we really value. And that's where it becomes hard, right? So you get to this point and you're like, well, I've done all the responsible things I'm supposed to be doing, and I've got a job and I'm busy, but I feel shallow, I feel lost. And it's that you have perhaps drifted, you've lost touch with what your values actually are, and you're getting the sense of maybe I'm not living in alignment with that.
Well, you bring up something really important. I think, to someone who might be, you know, you say, I'm not doing this to make other people happy. We're not saying that other people aren't like taking care of other people and that isn't valuable. You know, I think it's also like that when you're getting on a plane and they say, like, if the oxygen mask drops, put it on yourself first so that you can take care of somebody else. And all we're if this sounds being like you're being selfish by sort of focusing on yourself, we're not saying, you know, like a narcissist, you should be sort of focused all about yourself. But we need to go in deep on ourselves such that we can be of value to the people that we care about.
Exactly. And I think when we do that, again, going back to when there's a crisis, when someone in your life who you love is sick or passes away, that is often when you realize just how important other people really are in your life and maybe how much you have not been living that way. Mm-hmm. So I think part of what society does is have this grinding kind of in this, you know, capitalist corporate sense all the time so that we're not spending enough time with friends. We're not spending enough time with family. Because I think when we do tune in, we do realize, yeah, the social relationships are actually a huge source of our well-being, of our mental health. And that is often what we drift away from when we listen to society in terms of, you know, all these things that you, quote, should be chasing. So let's talk just briefly about some of the psychology research on values and what it says. Shalom Schwartz is one of the major researchers in this field. He's had a measure of human values that's been out for quite a long time. There's a publication, 1992, of his, Universals in the Context, Content and Structure of Values, Theoretical Advances and Empirical Tests in 20 Countries. This was published in Advances in Experimental Social Psychology. And he defines values as, quote, desirable trans-situational goals varying in importance that serve as guiding principles in people's lives. So stimulation is one of the values in Schwartz's model. So, for example, if I'm high in stimulation, what it means is that I like to seek out new things. I might like to learn new things, meet new people, go to new places. There are values of justice and benevolence. And so they are these kind of large abstract things, but they're things that motivate us and guide us in our daily lives. And we're going to put a link in the show notes. So if you want to take Schwartz's inventory, you can kind of see what your value profile is in his model. Another one we're going to talk about briefly is called the Values in Action model. This is Martin Seligman and others. And this is really a mix of values and strengths. Mm-hmm. And I like this one. It feels a little bit more applied. And again, we're going to put a link in here so you can go and complete this on your own. I've done this one, I think, 3 or 4 times over the last, 5 years. And, you know, I'm actually remarkably consistent in it. Mm-hmm. My top value every time shows up as appreciation of beauty and excellence. And this is in the category of self-transcendence. I also tend to score high on the Schwartz model. There's a transcendence value. And that means that you're drawn to things that feel larger to yourself, where you kind of lose yourself. We talked about awe.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling of awe and being connected with something larger than yourself. I like to play music. And that part of what I love about that, I lose myself in the music. I'm connected with something much larger than myself. Other ones that I took, because Neil and I did these together, getting ready for this podcast, fairness is one that I rate very high in. I get bothered when I feel like there are injustices, and I'm inclined to speak up in ways that sometimes get me in trouble, but I feel compelled to do it. Curiosity is another one. And that makes, I'm an academic, I'm a professor, right? I'm learning about stuff all the time. It's literally what attracted me to this job, and one of the things I love about it is that my job is essentially curiosity, and to contaminate people with that curiosity in the classroom and hopefully in this podcast. So Neil, what about your top three? Because I know you did this as well.
I did. Well, I also just want to take a sidestep here. It's like what I think is also true of our model that is true of this values in action model is, you know, we could academically tease apart values and strengths and how those things might be different. And we could also, I mean, talk about like values that you feel inside. And there are other things that other people see and report about you. And I think all of those we're just capturing under values. But I think I also like just to, and this, so my first one is creativity, and part of creativity is looking at a thing from different angles. And that is something that has just always been true of me. I think my parents would have said something about that. Like, I was always like trying to take things apart and put them back together and look at things from different angles. And I see that as both a strength and a value, that it was just sort of naturally part of things I gravitated to throughout my life, even as a young child. But there are also things that I think of reflectively that I value, that I find important. So we could tease that apart. But so creativity is
yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, you're a theater professor. You're a playwright. I mean, you live and breathe creativity.
And all I ever did was a kid was like go out in the woods and play Star Wars, and I read comic books and played Dungeons and Dragons. And like all I ever did, even before I found first music and then theater in junior high and then high school, before I even found those, I was already doing all of those things without any kind of instruction. I just gravitated to that kind of activity. The next two were surprising to me. I mean, as I reflect back on it, it's like, okay, that makes sense. I wouldn't have necessarily said it about myself at the time, but gratitude and humor were my other two, which both come under that self-transcendence dimension. I think of myself as a grateful person, but again, maybe that falls under, it's more of a sort of strength than necessarily something I intentionally think of as that I value. And humor, I don't necessarily think I'm a funny person, but I find things funny.
Right. Well, you value humor, right? So when you talk about values, right, so first, in the abstract, we all tend to endorse positive values. This is one of the hard things about measuring values and talking about them, because values, generally speaking, are good things. And we say, well, of course I value fairness and I value this. But we also value getting along with others, for example, and a certain kind of social harmony. And so, well, what happens when you see injustice, but you also value social harmony? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to speak up and disrupt the harmony? My point being that often we have different values. We have multiple values, and in certain circumstances, they conflict. And this is where you really start to see the relative importance for you, because you say, well, yeah, I might value social harmony quite a bit, but I really value justice in the sense of fairness, and I'm willing to maybe be very uncomfortable disrupting the social harmony because I feel I need to speak up about this injustice. This is where values, I think, get hard, is that in practice, we're often in situations where our values conflict. One way to categorize values that I think is helpful, and there's a good bit of research both in motivation and values here, is intrinsic versus extrinsic. So we talk about intrinsic motivations are things that you do that are inherently rewarding. It usually feels good to eat. Usually, for most of us, we enjoy being outside. We like the sun on our face. We may like good music. Extrinsic values are not in themselves directly rewarding, but we exchange them for things that are intrinsically rewarding, right? So I may work at a job. Maybe I don't find it that intrinsically rewarding, but I get money, which allows me to buy food and pay for heat, right, in a house. And so I'm doing it because I get something that I can then, in a way, spend coins to things that are intrinsically rewarding. So that's one way to think about this intrinsic, extrinsic. And it's when your choices in life, when those two are aligned, it's easy. You don't have a hard choice, right? If you're looking at a job and it pays well and it satisfies a bunch of things that are intrinsically important, that's a no-brainer. You go for it. It's when you have these choices where, like, okay, I can go down I can go down path A and do something that really seems to match with my values, but I'm going to sacrifice some, let's say, salary. Or I can go down path B, I'm going to make more money, but I'm not going to be as intrinsically satisfied. These are where our choices get hard.
Mm-hmm. And you even see that with our students in a college. If a student is extrinsically motivated, they want the grade, they want the degree, like those things that come to you, it's a much harder journey. If you just are intrinsically excited about your curiosity, you love the process of learning, like all of those things, college is a breeze. But yeah. we're again, what to your point, like we're so inculcated to like say like, well, you've got to get good grades. You've got to get this thing. You've got to get this degree. You've got to have to get this thing. You have to go get a good job that pays a lot of money. Like, and that, as you're about to point out, just isn't ultimately rewarding in the long run.
No, and we, I mean, I can think of many examples. And my, you know, I jokingly say I've got a long history of making choices that are bad financially for me. That's not completely true, but I have certainly sacrificed some financial gain for, you know, I mean, education is being in education as a profession is an example of that. Often many of us see it as a calling. We like some of the quality of life things. It speaks to a lot of our values. It does pay something, which is wonderful, but we know that we might be able to make more in industry in a different environment. And certainly when I came out of grad school, the people who were in my lab with me started literally at about twice what I started mm-hmm. at in terms of salary. I was okay with that trade-off because of the values, but it, you know, that's where the choices get hard. So this is a 2001 publication by Kasser and Ryan. It's called Be Careful What You Wish For, Optimal Functioning, and the Relative Attainment of Intrinsic and Extrinsic Goals. And I'm just going to read a small section here. Results from two samples of U.S. college students show that well-being outcomes are differentially associated with a focus on extrinsic applications, financial success, social recognition and appearance, versus intrinsic aspirations, self-acceptance, affiliation, and community feeling. Across ratings of the importance, likelihood of attainment, and current attainment of goals, findings suggest that a relative focus on extrinsic goals is either negatively or neutrally related to well-being, whereas a focus on intrinsic goals is associated with greater well-being. Extrinsic goals are further shown to be associated with lower self-esteem and more television consumption, greater drug use, lower quality of relationships with friends and romantic partners. So, you know, this is exactly where what I tell my students is to really look for that overlap. You want to look for something that feels meaningful, that's important to you, that you think you can also make a living on. If you really aren't at all concerned about the practical elements of, you know, and you're willing to risk it all. And this is often, I think, what dreamers do when you're really committed to something, especially if you're an artist or you're in a creative mm-hmm. field, right? You're like, I'm just going to risk it. I'm going to go yeah. for it because this is just so intrinsically rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that goes to, so our next reference here is a book called The One Thing by Keller. And essentially it's that, how do you figure out those core things that are deeply, passionately, powerfully important to you, such that the extrinsic doesn't matter quite as much, that it's all driving you, the intrinsic is driving. And the concept of The One Thing that Keller proposes is based on focusing on the most important things that are going to make you the most successful and toward your purposeful goal. And I like to tell students about, and one of the things we have this worksheet that we take them through classes, sort of reducing that sort of, I find all of these things valuable mm-hmm. down to five things. And Keller might say one thing, right? But I always say like you have five magic coins and you can only spend those coins on the things that are most important to you. Where do you spend them? And you can see this practically play out in terms of like, if you look at people's budgets and bank accounts and calendars, where do you spend the time, where you spend the money? And then that's maybe more habitual. How can we bring that in alignment so that you're spending all of those things effortfully toward those things? And that also reminds me of the quote by the Stoic philosopher Seneca the Younger, who said, if a man knows not which port he sails, no wind is favorable. And so thinking about, like, exactly where am I going? How are my what are my values pointing me to? What would it be when I get there? And then what are all the things I need to do along the way? Keller writes, success is not about doing the right thing. It's about doing the right thing, not about doing everything right. All right. And so that's an important distinction that also, I think, speaks to that extrinsic application as well. Like, we keep always wanting to please other people and do everything right. We want to live the right way, but we're not living right in alignment with ourselves all the time.
Yeah, and if you go into a job that is a really bad intrinsic fit, mm-hmm. it's just a matter of time before you're going to switch. You're not going to be happy. You're not going to be that successful at it, even if you have the ability. It's not going to be your passion. You're going to be most successful at the things that you find rewarding, that you find passionate. That's going to excite your creativity. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel motivated to go that extra mile, right? And so that is where you're likely to actually make a mark in the world.
And I think, I don't know if we talked about this on the last podcast, but I know you and I have talked about it offline. Like, you know, depression and anxiety are also signals. Like, when we're feeling those things, it's a signal that something isn't right in our world. And rather than just snuffing out the depression, anxiety, we want you to feel better, but pay attention to those signals and figure out, like, what about my life is out of alignment. And what we're also saying is yes, absolutely seek treatment for those things as needed, but also do that reflection to figure out, like, what's not in alignment. And sometimes having the courage to make those hard choices, as you talked about last time with Martha Beck, like, making the right choices that are in alignment is how we get out of that dark wood.
Yeah. Viktor Frankl also talks about this, in that some of the people that would come to him, they were lacking a feeling of fulfillment and meaning in their careers. And he said, you know, in a lot of traditional psychoanalysis, they would focus on, well, what's wrong with you? Let's talk about the relationship with your mother. And he was like, no, actually, there's nothing wrong with you. Maybe there's a bad fit between your career and your inner sense of meaning and purpose, and you should be looking at a switch. You should be looking to change your environment. So yeah, I think we do want to use these signals to think about, well, maybe I can make choices to bring what I'm doing on a daily basis more into line with what I believe, what feels true.
And part of that also is that we often find that sense of clutter in our lives, of being spread across too many things, and that we're not, that the efforts we have in the world aren't moving us or anyone else forward. We're just the sort of idea of busy work or busyness, mm-hmm. and the more we can limit that clutter and go deep, the sharper we are and happier we are. And this brings me to the classic Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi, who was a samurai. He was considered the greatest swordsman in all of feudal Japan. He was a samurai and then a ronin later. This is about 1645. And he said, and will get echoed across all of history, from one thing, know 10,000 things. You like to think of Bruce Lee, and I think of this quote from Bruce Lee: I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times.
I talk with my Tai Chi students about this quite regularly. I think any martial artist who trains should, because, you know, we're so, I think, over intellectual in our society in many ways. We think if I just get the right words in my head, then I'll be able to do this thing. And often it's actually just more about practice, right? And so, yeah, I can tell you applications for all these different martial moves, but there are actually a limited number that are going to be kind of my habitual reflex-like reactions in an emergency. And that's exactly what this is referring to, knowing a whole bunch of things, can you really do any of them well? And I think our society kind of feeds this, and that we get this kind of that attention deficit that we seem to train with social media. People learn something and then they're like, okay, I've learned that. And I see this sometimes in my martial arts students. Okay, I've learned that. What's the next move?
All right.
And it's like, okay, well, you learned it at a very shallow, basic level. How many times have you practiced it? Can you do it on reflex? Is it really part of your movement? That's a very different thing.
And that what I'm also hearing from you is also that sense of not just the technical aspects, but the deeper purposeful application of those as well. And Miyamoto talks about this as well. There's a quote from Five Rings. The primary thing you take a sword in your hands is the intention to cut the enemy, whatever the means. Whenever you parry, hit, spring, strike, or touch the enemy's cutting sword, you must also cut the enemy in the same movement. It is essential to attain this. If you think only about hitting, springing, striking, or touching the enemy, you will not be able to actually cut him. Now, that's obviously, he's talking quite literally about sword play. But if we abstract that,
it might
that,
not be play at that point if you're cutting someone.
right? If we abstract that a little bit, it's not just the habits and the behaviors, it's habits and behaviors in alignment with a purpose.
With a goal.
Why, with a goal. Yep. Why am I? I'm not just cutting and I'm not doing this to be technical. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this for a very specific reason. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to the gym just for the gym's sake. I'm not eating this kind of food. I'm not having these conversations with these people. Why? That's the driver.
It really is. And the same, just to loop back real quick to the intrinsic versus extrinsic, the same behavior can be done for different reasons and result in very different senses of fulfillment. So take going to the gym. If you're going to the gym because you want external recognition, that's one of these external values. What the research says is you're actually going to be less happy with yourself. Going to the gym is not going to make you feel better, actually, at that point, because you're looking for this external validation, which is something that constantly needs to be renewed. If you're going to the gym because I want to feel fit and healthy, and I want to have a good quality of life. That is an internal sense of something that you feel. It's the same behavior, but you're doing it for an intrinsic motivation. You know, because it's an intrinsic value, intrinsically motivated, you're going to be happier, you're going to be healthier, you're going to have higher self-esteem. So you can take something now that you may do because of an extrinsic motivation and think to yourself, well, can I reframe this? Is there actually an intrinsic reason? And that kind of self-talk and in terms of why you're doing it can be enough to actually help you be happier with yourself and why you're doing it.
Well, that just as a personal anecdote, that was absolutely me in the gym. In my 20s and 30s, the gym was very much about looking a particular way for like an extrinsic purpose.
Yep.
And it made me miserable. And when I enjoyed the physical movement, but I didn't like why I was doing what I was doing it for. And when I started doing a deeper dive on myself, I was able to do exactly what you're saying, sort of shift that. I didn't have to give up the activity, but the purpose, the origin of it became more intrinsic.
Yeah, you found a more meaningful reason to do it. All right,
purpose.
Yeah, let's talk about purpose. Right. Okay. So we've talked about values a bit. We're moving to the other part of the triangle here. We're this third leg of a stool, purpose. So values, these are, these things that are deeply meaningful to you, that you care about. If you think about things that you might accomplish, long-term goals, now we're getting to this sense of purpose. So one definition, a stable and generalized intention to accomplish something that is at once meaningful to the self and consequential for the world beyond the self. This is also something we see in the well-being research that shows up over and over again. And back to what you were saying about this isn't about being selfish, that it's actually often in community, in relationship to others, in service to others, that we find our deepest sense of purpose, our highest sense of well-being and flourishing. And this is back to something we've talked about over and over again, that we are social beings, that we are not meant to exist in isolation. So let's talk about just a couple of research articles briefly, because I'll preview just by saying one of the things that we see is that when you have a clearer sense of purpose, you have lower rates of mortality, meaning you live longer. You have lower rates of morbidity, meaning you get sick less. And we talked about this quite explicitly in the last episode, Viktor Frankl talked about being in the concentration camps, and that you could see when someone lost the will to live. Yeah, kind of. There's no point. Why go? I'm just living for more suffering. He said that that's when you knew it was just a matter of days, that the will to live was necessary. And you see this as people get older very often, in that sometimes, especially if a long-term spouse dies, that they seem to lose the will to live, and how quickly they can decline after that. So there's a bunch of positive kind of physical and mental health components. So the research shows, for example, that the effects of cognitive decline that are a natural part of aging are somewhat buffered by a sense of meaning and purpose. Not completely. It's part of aging, but somewhat buffered. Here's a journal article. This is the Journal of Positive Psychology, 2016 publication. It's called The Three Meanings of Meaning in Life, Distinguishing Coherence, Purpose, and Significance. And so they distinguish this meaning, right, three meanings of meaning, into three categories: coherence, purpose, and significance. Coherence is this sense that my life makes sense at some larger level. There's a sense of comprehensibility. The opposite of this is kind of this feeling frantic, scattered. You mentioned this. We're often so busy in modern life. I know a lot of parents of young kids who they feel so scattered. Like, yes, they have the sense of purpose as a parent, but they're busy at work, and then they pick their kids up and they run to this activity and they run to that activity and they run. And at the end of the day, they just feel exhausted. And sometimes there is this lack of coherence, right? And Martha Beck might refer to this as an integrity, in having kind of everything you do kind of mesh well together. They differentiate coherence from purpose. And as we've talked about, I think we're using this very much the same way, a clear goal, aim, direction in life. And the opposite of this aimlessness, this loss of direction. And I think we especially see this in our college students or high school students, that adolescent emerging adulthood period, where it's like, everyone's asking me what I'm going to be when I grow up. I don't know. I feel lost. I feel this lack of purpose. And then the last component is significance. And this is the belief that life is inherently worth living. And the opposite is this, you know, lack of value and this kind of hopelessness. So, you know, these are just three different ways, again, to kind of talk about meaning and purpose that I think match pretty nicely with what we're discussing.
Yeah, I think we would call significance value, purpose, and coherence meaning. Yeah. And they're calling all of it meaning, but, you know, six right. of one.
Yes. One of the things that the research shows is that this sense of meaning and purpose tends to build resilience. And resilience is defined, this is a definition by Mastin et al., 1990, the process of capacity for or outcome of successful adaptation despite challenging or threatening circumstances. So resilience, colloquially, it's your ability to bounce back after experiencing hard stuff. Life throws you curveballs. You never really know. Part of the whole point of focusing on your well-being is that you're building resilience, right? You're not waiting until there's an emergency to kind of focus on your mental, physical health. You're trying to do that from the get-go so that when those things happen, because they will, and they'll happen in unexpected times, you're starting from a strong place.
Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that resilience, both sort of proactively and retroactively, like the having resilience at the end, you are able to bounce back, as you said, but also thinking about the things that you're doing now to build that resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say, I think everything we're talking about
right.
in this podcast is about, you know, will help build resilience. Mm. So one journal article, Life Purpose as a Predictor of Resilience and Persistence in College Students During the COVID-19 Pandemic. This is a Journal of College Student Retention published in 2024. And the title pretty much sums it up, that the higher the more students reported a sense of purpose, the more likely they were to have intentions to persist through college during that very difficult time. A lot of people were home. They were isolated. They're taking classes online. But also the higher their resilience scores. Another article, Sense of Purpose as a Psychological Resource for Aging Well. This is a really big article published in Developmental Psychology. It's a 2015. It's a sample of 1,475 older adults assessed over an 18-year period. And I'm going to read a small section from the abstract. Participants who scored higher on sense of purpose reported lower levels of functional disability, performed better on cognitive tests, such as episodic memory and speed of processing, and reported better self-rated health and fewer depressive symptoms. Higher sense of purpose was also associated with increased probability of survival. So this is what I was previewing earlier, right? The research shows over and over again the sense of purpose. It helps us age better. It helps us deal with difficulties in life. And the longer you live, frankly, the more of those you see. Mm-hmm.
And you've probably had just, you know, in your own life, maybe you or somebody you know, you go through a bunch of hardships and somebody says, well, what's even the point?
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't know the point,
yeah,
those are going to be much harder to deal with.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, so, okay. So we know then that having this sense of meaning and purpose is good for your well-being, you know, reduces morbidity, reduces mortality, builds resilience. Okay. So how do you get more of it? Right. If we know having more meaning and purpose is good, how do we get it? Okay. Here's a 2021 study. From the Journal of Happiness Studies. You and I actually assigned this to our students in class. The study is called Using a Technology-Based Meaning and Purpose Intervention to Improve Well-Being, a Randomized Control Study. And I'm going to read a section here from the procedure because it's all about essentially ways in which you build meaning and purpose. And a lot of this, if you're longtime listeners to our podcast, a lot of these things will sound familiar to you. On day one, participants were presented with essential knowledge of the meaning construct and reflected on why working on meaning would be beneficial to them. The second day asked participants to identify specific sources of meaning in one's life. On day three, participants worked on the comprehension of one's meaning in life by reflecting on what makes them the person they are. The fourth day got participants to identify their own values. On day five, participants worked on goal attainment and committing to setting a personal life goal for the next year. On day six, participants reflected on their purpose and created a purpose statement. And on day seven, they integrated the previous daily task into a vision for living their life more meaningfully going forward. This is a really cool study. And basically, the participants who were randomly assigned to this condition versus the others were in a waitlist control. They showed higher measures of life satisfaction, greater what we call positive affect, which basically means you report more happy emotions, and fewer measures of what we would call negative affect, which are just sad emotions, and higher measures of believing that your life is meaningful. So, you know, this is exactly what you want. So this is much that we've talked about in mindfulness. We talked about in episode 9 related to values and purpose, and of course this episode. And so this all gets, I think, this idea of being purposeful. Mm-hmm. These things don't happen on accident. The more we reflect on them and try and cultivate them, the more clear we're going to have a sense of purpose and meaning, which is then going to give us that resilience and whatnot that we want in life.
And I just want to highlight two things here that I think are really critical to me, at least here, is that on day six, they created a purpose statement. On day seven, they created a vision for living their life more meaningfully. And I think that's really important that, you know, I think we live as specifically as we are specific with ourselves, right? If you live generally, you're going to get a general outcome. If you're specific, you're going to get a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to not just sort of generally say, well, I think, you know, it goes back to that, for the man who knows not which port he sails, no wind is favorable. If I'm just going west, I might end up in the Bahamas. I might end up in South America, right? West, what is west? If I say I'm going to, you know, this island, then I know exactly where I'm sailing, and that helps you. It's like, then you're like, why am I sailing to that island? Like that ability to be really specific. I used to have students when I first started doing those worksheets memorize their sort of vision statement. We called it something else, but like memorize it. So it's in your bones. And I know for me, that's been really helpful. If not to have it memorized, at least have it know it so well. Because when those problems come up, it's like, when I say yes or no to something, what is the metric that I'm measuring that against? How do I know what to say yes and no to if I don't say, is this going to move me toward that thing?
I think that's brilliant. And I mean, I've thought, you and I've talked about this. Mm. I think about it as a personal mission statement.
Right. Yeah. Right? I love that.
Businesses have mission statements. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it is to cultivate kind of individual and collective well-being, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of work on my own well-being, but also to help others and to share that. And of course, the class that we teach and now this podcast is a direct reflection of that. So I've tried to use that as a guide to then decide, okay, you know, I'm doing this other thing. It doesn't really do this, and it actually takes time away from me doing more of this. So I'm gonna step away from it, and I'm gonna take on more things that actually fit with this mission statement.
Well, and I think that's a perfect example. Like the class in this podcast, like the class is part of our job. This podcast is like extra. Yeah. And you know, in a world where we have way more things to do than we can even count, this doesn't feel like work. That class doesn't feel like work. It feels like I love going there. I love talking about, I love working with the students. I love seeing their experience and hearing their experience. And like, this feels rewarding in and of itself, whether anything else came of it, right?
Would you say it's intrinsically rewarding?
I might, in fact. And you know, like, we were talking about like different models, and I think that purpose, and you were talking about some of the health benefits and what, and this also goes to a Japanese concept, a philosophy called Ikigai, which was first developed in the late 1950s by Dr. Meiko Kamiya, apologies if I'm mispronouncing that, a psychiatrist in Japan in the late 1950s, and she was working with treating leprosy patients. And similar to Viktor Frankl's observations, she wondered why some of the patients thrived and some of them suffered. And she called that ineffable sense of hope ikigai, which is intentionally difficult to translate, but often gets translated as a reason for being. And having that reason for being, as you pointed out, was a predictor of whether they were going to succumb to this illness or thrive through it. And there are four components of that, and I say them here just to also link it back to our model as well. The four components of ikigai are something you are good at, something you love. I would put that into our strengths and values. Something the world needs. I'd put that in purpose. Something for which you get paid.
That's the extrinsic part,
but right? it's the necessary extrinsic part that you were talking about as well. So okay. I bring that up just like, you know, I think you and I both love triangulating all these things.
Yeah.
Histories, cultures, like what is the human experience? I love, you know, now I'm sort of blanking on the name, sort of the mythic structure, Joseph Campbell, Joseph Campbell sort of looking at all these different, what is common amongst all these cultures? And I think that's also what I like us doing here. Like what's common here? We're not reinventing the wheel. We're just trying to synthesize a little bit.
Exactly. Okay, so I think that wraps up today's episode. So this week's challenge, it's similar to last week's challenge if you listened. Last week we asked you to reflect on your values, and you could do this in a couple ways. One is just to ask yourself, what are things that are important to me, right? What are things that are very important to me? And another way is to kind of look at your life over the last month and say, what do I actually spend a lot of time on? And maybe notice where those match or don't match. And so this week's challenge is very much related to that, but to more deliberately on kind of a daily basis to think about how your daily behaviors either do align with your values or don't align with your values. And I think that this is not always something that's actually easy to do, and that the more you do it, the easier it gets because it is in this reflective process that you start to actually refine what your values are and you get a clearer sense of what they are. So, again, just think about kind of what you do on a regular basis, how you treat other people. This could be at your job, at your home, and whatnot. And are you living in alignment with your values? What might it mean to live more in alignment with your values? And then I'll just tease for next episode. That is the focus of next episode, is to how to kind of bring these things into what Martha Beck would call integrity, this greater sense of coherence between your behavior, your values, and your purpose, so that you feel like you're living a more meaningful life. All right, so that's all for this episode. Subscribe to Thriveology Lab on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast. Leave a comment or question on YouTube, and we'll be sure to respond. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We do post, actually, a bunch of the things that we reference here are posted there. So we only post once a day. It won't blow up, but you'll get links to actually some of these articles and studies that we're talking about. So it's a nice way to, again, have that daily reflection about what you're doing. So if you have questions or comments, or there's a subject you'd like to hear us discuss, please reach out to ThriveologyLab@gmail.com. Thrive on.
Thrive on, friends.